Hello, and welcome to the Jeff Blumenkrantz Songbook Podcast, Month Upon a Time, Episode 6. It's November, and I have a special guest who should have been on this podcast 5 years ago. He's so talented, and he's my friend, and I'm so happy he's here with me today. It's Mr. Billy Porter.
Hello.
You got it down.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for doing this. I'm so excited we're doing this finally.
I know. I was getting ready to get a complex because I hadn't gotten my invitation. And I was like, I was sitting in my house and listening to the podcasts and looking at the names. And I'm like, doom de doom de doom de doom. I wonder if he's going to call me.
It was only a matter of time. And look, here you are with a very serious song.
I know.
So, after last month's ridiculousness, I needed to bring things down a notch.
Absolutely.
And thank you for being willing to, put aside the fantastic showiness that you have brought in the past to be.
Well,
to,
yes. As I get older, I get more subtle in my older age.
Well, I'm gonna wanna talk about that. But let me just backtrack a little.
Okay.
We're talking about the song way too soon.
Okay.
We need to talk about you for a good, 10 minutes or so.
Please. By all means.
Billy, you, as I was assembling my materials about you, I realized your career has spanned so many interesting niches. I mean, right out of college, I think?
Yes.
Star Search?
Well, right out of college, it was the second semester of my sophomore year, I booked the original cast of Miss Saigon.
Oh.
So I moved to New York, and Miss Saigon was an internship for me.
Oh, my gosh.
A paid internship, because obviously I got paid. And so I opened my Broadway show in April and then flew back to Pittsburgh on a personal day to graduate from Carnegie Mellon.
Wait a second. Did you say your senior year or your sophomore year?
My senior year.
Oh, okay.
My
okay.
senior year. Yeah.
Amazing.
And so I got to graduate because it was considered an internship and I got credit for it. And,
amazing.
So I got to get my degree. And so in that show, that was when I did Star Search that year.
Amazing.
During Miss Saigon.
So you're on Broadway and then you won Star Search, didn't you?
I know. I won Star Search. It was like the last generation's American Idol.
Yeah, I know. What's weird? Like, I went to look for video on it. I thought it must be up there, but it's not. Where is it?
It's not up there. I have to first get it transferred from VHS.
Stop it. Those, those tapes are no good anymore.
To DVD.
You better do it
so
today.
That I can then, I got to find it first.
You better do it today because those tapes are deteriorating as we speak.
I know. I got to find it. I have to find it. I know.
Well, I'm sorry that I can't send people to see you on Star Search because I remember watching you and you were amazing. And you
Thank you.
Definitely deserved that win. So we've got Broadway, we've got Star Search, then we also have recording artist.
Yes.
We also have film actor.
Some film and television, yes.
One man show. Star.
Mm-hmm.
Writing.
Directing. Mm-hmm.
Choreographing. And wait, there was, serious drama diva.
I know.
It's pretty incredible, Billy. It's pretty incredible. I have to say, having seen your most recent performance,
yes,
in Angels in America. Actually, you did that other thing. You did that Lear after that, didn't you?
I did that after that. Yes.
We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But seeing you in Angels in America, you totally blew me away. I mean, I knew you were gifted, and I knew you had a lot in you, but you had it all in you. I mean, that was a deeply fantastic performance.
It was really, I have to say, one of the most profound experiences of my career. This last year has been just profound all the way around. But, you know, when I was 23, Angels in America debuted on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't really know much about it. And, you know, everybody was talking about this show and George Wolfe directed it. And I really loved his work. And I found myself in the theater not knowing anything about it. And I was just so I was changed. My life was changed. You know, it really gave me the courage to live inside of my own truth, really acknowledge, first of all, what my truth was, which is, you know, I am an African-American gay man, and really sort of live inside of that truth and not apologize for that and allow that to be the catalyst that sort of thrusted me into the next 20 years of my life. And it was the first time that I had ever seen, you know, a fully three-dimensional depiction of an African-American gay person in anything. Like, I had just never seen it before. And so it wasn't until I saw it on stage and saw myself reflected back at me that I realized that I had never seen it before. You know, I had never seen it depicted that way. And it was so amazing for me, you know, and it really changed my life. And I really set out to make decisions about my life and my career that were rooted and based in this newfound truth and courage. And so to be able to come full circle 20 years after that and, you know, play the role in New York City that changed my life and the role that I've dreamed of, it was just, I really don't have the vocabulary to explain how profound it was for me.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like it was an incredibly exhausting experience, and yet it was something that you didn't seem to mind going through.
No, because, you know, for me, it's like I realized that I got into this business because I have something to say, because I want to make a difference, because my life was changed through the arts. And I want to be the type of person that changes lives with the kind of work that I do. And, you know, the first 15 years of my career, I realized that I was going down a path that wasn't necessarily going to lead me to that kind of work. And I had to, you know, just change it, you know, just make a real sort of like definite U-turn or, you know, shift and go down the road less traveled. And, you know, so it took a while for me to change the perception of who I am and what I do. But Angels in America really, I think,
sealed the deal.
I think it sealed the deal. And, you know, I think it sealed the deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get more serious than that.
So the going back to like what you were saying about this like kind of fork in the road.
Yes, thank you, fork.
does that have anything to do with like where the work you were doing as a recording artist?
Well, it was recording artist. It was also, you know, fundamentally the assumed gift is my voice.
Yes.
And when I say assumed, I say it's even how I approached my life, you know, because that was the thing that saved me. My voice was the thing that saved my life. It got me out of the ghetto. It got me out of my, you know, unfortunate predicaments in my childhood. It got me, it stopped people from bullying me. It changed my life. It saved my life. And so singing was very important. And I thought that that was my way in. And once I was in, I would be able to expand the base. what I realized pretty quickly was because of the specificity of the way that I sang. You know, I grew up singing in the church. I grew up singing gospel music. And my voice, you know, in my 20s and for a number of years was extremely, extremely high. And I could do things that nobody else could do. And in this business, you have to get attention. And so I came to New York and I played my trump card because my trump card would get me attention and get me work. And like I said, I thought playing my trump card would get me in the door and then I would be able to expand. And what I found was that my trump card pigeonholed me to the point where I wasn't being considered for anything else beyond that specialty thing that I did. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't enough for me. That wasn't enough for me. So I had to make some changes. Mm.
So looking back at the last 10 years and the exploration and all these different hats you've worn, do you have a favorite hat?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. It's so weird. It's like my favorite hat is the hat that I have on at the time.
Well, that's a great attitude.
It's like I walk through the doors that are open, you know, and I've been accused of being unfocused. I've been accused of being that guy. And it's like, listen, somebody offered me a gig. Somebody offered me a job directing. I ain't doing nothing else. I may as well go and practice and exercise that muscle. Somebody offered me to, you know, write a musical or, you know, be in a movie or be in a play or, you know, like, it depends. It's like whatever doors are open for me are the doors that I walk through.
Well, what do you think? Should we, like, sing a song?
Please. Please, I would love to sing your song.
I would love to hear you sing my song. Before you sing it,
okay,
I have to thank my friend, Alexandra Silber,
who I adore.
Oh, I love that you know her.
Oh, I love her.
Isn't she amazing?
Yes.
Alexandra is a beautiful woman, but also a very talented actor and singer who I had the good fortune to have on in a concert of my music in London when she was still living there.
Oh, right.
She's American, but she spent a lot of time in the UK. And she suggested an idea for this idea for the song about Guy Fawkes Day, which is this big holiday in the UK, which I had no idea existed.
Who knew?
You didn't know either, right?
I had no clue.
I know. So I called my friends in England, Suzanne Thomas and John Blakey, and I was like, you guys, is this really a thing? And then they were very generous. They spent some time with me telling me like what the holiday is about and like what their experiences were. And I sort of crafted this completely fictional story for Billy to sing.
A fabulously fictional story.
Oh, go on. So thanks to Al, thanks to Suzanne and John for, you know, filling me in. And here is Billy Porter singing The 5th of November.
Remember, remember the 5th of November. Gunpowder treason and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes, 'twas his intent to blow up the king and the parliament. 60 barrels of powder below. Poor old England to overthrow. We didn't know it was a holiday the day we moved from Atlanta to the faraway UK. But from the airplane we saw fireworks all around, and counted 27 bonfires before we hit the ground. We all raised hell when we were told we had to go, but when my father put his foot down, there was just no saying no. So he let himself be transferred to get ahead, and sacrificed his family's happiness instead. I'll always remember the 5th of November. Betrayal was hanging in the air. All these bonfires to remind us of some guy's treachery, and my father, who didn't seem to care that we all wanted to be anywhere but there. The year that followed was particularly bad for the first black family the school had ever had. The local kids were either snotty or downright mean. My only friend in England was a Pac-Man machine. The next November 5th, my parents thought we all should see our borough's fireworks display and the Guy Fawkes effigy. I said, "You go ahead, but I'm gonna split. You can't make me party with people who keep treating me like shit. I'll always remember that 5th of November coming home from the video arcade to see my parents and my sisters standing by while the members of the fire brigade just sprayed and sprayed and sprayed." They never caught the culprits, but they compiled a list of names. They thought it might have been the same kids that set that house on New Cross in flames. Well, it was more than even my stubborn father could take, and we were back in Atlanta before Christmas break. It was almost like we never left at all, and no one talked about the fire that happened that fall. Now November 5th comes and goes like any other day. No more bonfires or effigies or fireworks display. But I still have a vivid memory of that day and a secret act of treachery. Remember, remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes was hung for his treachery, but here's the funny catch. All he did was guard some powder. Whereas I actually lit the match.
Oh, Billy. That was awesome.
It's the reveal, honey. It's all about the reveal.
Oh,
you know I love a reveal.
Oh, you. I love the way you sing this. You sound so good.
Thank you.
And could you hear? I know you can. You could hear it because you were hearing it. But if you listen really closely to the last few seconds of the song, there is a passing fire truck. I mean, what are the chances?
I know. I love that. I love it. It's just too perfect.
I know.
Too perfect.
Oh, thank you so much for singing that.
Please, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, now we have to talk about what's coming up for you because it's kind of cool stuff.
Dun, da, da, da. Well, I don't think it's really been formally announced yet.
Well, then we have a like hot off the press on the Jeff McCrant Songbook podcast.
But the offer has come in, so I'm going to talk about it.
Talk about it.
It's like the secret. I'm going to put it out into the universe and make sure that it happens for real. But I've been cast in a new musical called Kinky Boots, which is based on the British comedy, How Apropos. the music is being written by Cyndi Lauper. The book is being written by Harvey Fierstein. And it's being directed and choreographed by Jerry Mitchell.
Love.
And it's a wonderful, you know, comedy. And I get to do all of the things I do. Sing and dance and act and speak with a British accent. And walk in high heels.
I love it. Have you ever done drag before?
Yeah, I have. I mean, not a lot. But I have done it enough.
Now, and this character, I saw the movie, so I know he wears heels, but is he a full-out drag queen?
Yeah, he's full.
Oh,
he's full
out.
It's a full, she's a full drag queen.
All right.
Yes. Wow. Who starts designing boots for a shoe factory in Northampton for men, basically. High-heeled boots that can withstand the weight of a man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. I think it's going to be, I think it's, you know, she has potentials.
I love that you're playing that role. I remember when that movie came out, and right after it came out, people were very, very, very hot to musicalize it.
Yeah.
It just really,
it sings.
Yeah.
It sings.
So it's great casting. My friend, one of my best friends, Adina Alexander, has been involved in the workshops for a while.
Yeah?
And she's going to be doing this one coming up with
you. Oh, good.
So, I'm really like panting to see it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited because I haven't really been in a musical in New York since, I guess, my own show, since Ghetto Superstar.
Ghetto Superstar, that was amazing.
At the Public Theater.
The Public in the City in Pittsburgh, I mean.
Yes,
like
City Theater in Pittsburgh as well. Yes. I don't think I've done a musical here, yeah. So I'm excited.
Awesome, can't wait. Congratulations.
Thank you, honey.
And then in the meantime.
The meantime and in between time.
You've got a choreographic gig coming up?
Oh, yes. I will be choreographing a musical called Pop.
Yes.
Which is about the shooting of Andy Warhol at City Theater in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
In April.
That's awesome. I've heard some songs from that project. I'm a
fan. It's a great show.
Yeah.
It really, really is a wonderful show. I'm looking forward to it.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
And there's also a theater company in the mix.
Yes, I'm involved with this theater company called Exit Pursued by a Bear. And it's, you know, this sort of guerrilla theater company. And we do shows in loft spaces. And we, you know, I performed the role of Lear this past summer.
What was that like?
It was Lear set in the world of the documentary Paris is Burning. So it was sort of like
House of Lear.
So it's basically House of Lear, and you know, it's Mother Lear, and she's mother of the House of Lear, and she's dying of AIDS, and
wow.
You know, it was very
Were the daughters like,
and the daughters are drag queens, and you know, but it was really fully like the full text, and you know, we actually did the first folio, and this wonderfully brilliant new director Ed Iskandar is the founder of the company, and he's a wonderful, wonderful director, and you'll be hearing a lot from him. And so we did it. We did it. I played Lear at 42. I can't wait. I mean, fully, though. Like, fully.
Amazing.
Like, all of the text. There were, like, I think there was, like, 7 lines of the first folio that we cut.
That sounds amazing.
And, you know, you go to the space, and it's environmental, and there was a big runway, and, you know, we serve dinner in between acts, and we serve dessert in between the second act, and it's, you know, it's communal, you know, because there's nowhere to go. There's no fourth wall. So it's a very interesting way to sort of experience theater. It really is cooperative.
Yeah.
In that way and in that sense. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful way to work.
And if people want to support this theater, how would they go about doing that?
Go to epbb.org. We're raising money. We're trying to raise money for our second season. And
Wait, say that again.
EPBB.org.
What does that stand for?
Exit Pursued by a Bear.
But no,
is the name of the company.
No, just Exit Pursued by Bear.
Uh-huh.
EPBB.
Yes. EPBB.org.
You are really so, you've created such an interesting existence for yourself. And really, it's like so fun to talk to you and to watch you expand and shimmer and shine.
Well, thank you, honey. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I really, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your bringing your great talents to my music today.
Well, I thank you for having me.
Wow.
It's about time.
And I just want to thank Alexandra Silber again for the idea, and Suzanne and John for their help. And this is Jeff and Billy saying so long.
So long.